In May of 1992, something slightly unusual took place in the publishing world, you could say. It used to be a magazine. It was published by the Aguda, known as the Jewish Observer. Some of you remember this magazine? So the Jewish Observer contained many interesting articles over the year of different personalities, rabbis, lay leaders. And an article appeared in the Jewish Observer in May of 1992, and as part of that article, there was a standalone page, page 21 in the May 1992 edition of the Jewish Observer. It's interesting because this side panel, and I'm sure the publishers, there's a proper name for this when you insert a panel of text. It's not part of the article, but it's an editorial insert in a gray box on the right side of page 21, just to the right, and you see it on your packet, on your marmakomos, just to the right of a picture of the late Gaon, Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the undisputed leader of world Torah Jewry in the late 1930s after the passing of the Chafetz Chaim. There is a printed essay, the summary of a talk, of a eulogy given for Reb Chaim Ozer. For, here it is, the Kohen Gadol, symbol of Das Torah, from a eulogy for Reb Chaim Ozer Grzesinski Zatzal from Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Boston, Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. I do not know how many times in the history of the Jewish Observer, they quoted Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. And I do not know how many times he is referred to, how many times the Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan is quoted. But certainly, it's fascinating, and I'm sure this was somewhat controversial for some people, that Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik is being cited in a context, in an article by a man by the name of Rabbi Yaakov Feitman, a lengthy article here on a topic that they call Das Torah, which literally means the knowledge of Torah. I thought, and I confirmed, that we dealt with this topic of Das Torah several years ago. I checked the files, and it is in the filing cabinet. We did deal with this. So don't think we're just going to rehash what we talked about a few years ago, because I know that would be a problem, because obviously it would be boring to repeat what we said 5 years ago. Yes. So when we talked about this topic of Das Torah last time, it was a much broader perspective. And we cited many different sources about the origins of this concept, the scope of this concept, the relevance. But what I want to do today is to look at it in a more narrow lens, specifically at Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, at this eulogy, and the controversial topic that is Das Torah is actually, in some sense, linked to the history and the development of thought of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. So what I'd like to do is really focus right now on this hesped. So this, what you have on this page is just the English summary. If you turn the page, you see the original Hapardes. We've quoted Hapardes before. It's this traditional Torah journal that was published right here in Chicago by Rabbi Shmuel Aaron Halevi Pardes, 1220 Independence Boulevard. I don't know if that's on the south side, the west side, the north side. West side. The old west side. Here we are, 1220. Where's this Independence? It's probably near Douglas Boulevard, because everyone talks about Douglas Boulevard. I'm getting some. This is great. This is all my name dropping of the places I never heard of. That's right. So it was $3 a year to subscribe to Hapardes. And there were Torah articles here, and there were advertisements, and then there were news items. news items, what was happening in the Torah world. And this edition is October of 1940. Well, they're catching you up on the latest and greatest news from the Aguda Convention. The Aguda Convention, late 1940. Who speaks at the Aguda Convention? You see where there's a little arrow. Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, me Boston. He speaks at the Aguda Convention. Why? At the invitation of Reb Lazer Silver, who was the most senior Torah personality in America at that time. He was the head of the Sachtos HaRabbanim. Reb Lazer Silver invites, he was the head of the Aguda, he invites Rav Soloveitchik to speak at the Aguda Convention to memorialize and be maspid Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski, who just passed away. Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski was living in, anybody know? Was living in Vilna. But remember, this is 1940, which means that Vilna was under Soviet kind of dominion, because when the Germans and the Russians, they split Poland right before the war in 1939, everything to the east was under Stalin, and everything in the west was under Hitler. Yamach Shemam v'zichram. So Rav Chaim Ozer is in Vilna. He dies in 1940, not because of any anti-Jewish persecution. He was, at this time, responsible not just for answering Shilas for world Jewry, but he was really overseeing not just the halachic elements, but he was providing leadership, not just spiritual leadership, general leadership to the entire Jewish world. Ak de kach, that he, at his instruction, he encouraged all the yeshivas that were in the Soviet zone to all come to Vilna. So several thousand, about 2,000 and change, which is interesting that there weren't that many yeshiva bachrim bechlal in Eastern Europe and the millions of Jews before the war, they came to Vilna, and Rav Chaim Ozer set them up in different places. So some of you have heard, for example, of Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung. Rav Hirschsprung was a great goan from Montreal. He was in the Lubliner Yeshiva, the Chachmei Lublin Yeshiva. He ended up coming to Vilna. He met with Rav Chaim Ozer. They talked about getting settled. They had lots of yeshiva bachrim. Some of these bachrim, and Rav Hirschsprung was one of them, was able to escape Europe thanks to Sugihara and the train that got them to Japan. Rav Chaim Ozer was responsible for everything. He authored very important tshuvas called Shiles and Tshuvas, Achiezer, and he was the undisputed Manig Hador. He was the undisputed Gadol Hador at the time of his passing. Why did they invite Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik to deliver the hesped for Rav Chaim Ozer? Probably because Rav Soloveitchik, having just arrived in New York, Boston a few years earlier, he originally was supposed to come to Chicago, as many of you know, for a job here in Chicago at the Beis Medrash LaTorah. But because of the recession, they rescinded the offer and he went to Boston. And then from Boston, when his father passed away a year later, his father passed away in January of 1941, then when his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, passed away, he became the Rosh Hashiva of Reeds. But before that, he was only in Boston for several years. Before that, he was actually supposed to come to Chicago. Anyway, they invited Rav Soloveitchik because he was recognized unquestionably already when he was in Europe as one of the leading Torah giants, even at a very young age. He was born in 1903. But he was recognized not just because of his lineage, that from his father's side, his father was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, his grandfather was Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. His mother's side, his mother was the daughter of Rav Elia Pruzhiner. But what was her real last name? Rav Elia Feinstein. His mother, was a cousin of the Feinsteins, of Rav Moshe Feinstein. So it was, not just his pedigree, which was, unmatched, but it was his goyness. In addition, he had a personal relationship with Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski. In several occasions earlier in his life, I think during World War I they had some time together, but also he would travel to Vilna on occasion, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, you have to ask the historians, Rav Chaim Ozer had a connection to his wife's family. Mrs. Soloveitchik, Rebbetzin Soloveitchik, Rav Soloveitchik's wife, Tanya Soloveitchik, had connections with Rav Chaim Ozer in Vilna. So, interestingly, when Rav Soloveitchik and Tanya married, I think it was 1931, they married in Vilna. Who was their Masada Kedushin? Rav Chaim Ozer Grozensky was their Masada Kedushin. Also, interestingly, note within a note, that Rav Soloveitchik's parents were not at their wedding because they were in New York. So he got married in Vilna without his parents, which is kind of crazy. But like, to us, we could never fathom such a thing before COVID. Now, okay, it happens. People get married without parents. Anyway, so he had a personal connection to Reb Chaim Ozer. He knew Reb Chaim Ozer. I'll tell you one more Maisa. This is a legend, but it's a great legend, and it totally could be true. That one time, Rav Soloveitchik went to speak and learning with Reb Chaim Ozer, and he told him a Chiddush, a new Torah idea that he thought, that he came up with, an insight. And Reb Chaim Ozer said, oh, what a great idea. And he went to his shelf, and he pulled off a Sefer. He said, this Sefer, he has your Chiddush, great Sefer, great Chiddush, it appears in the Sefer. And then Rav tells him another Chiddush, and he finds another Sefer, and another Sefer, and another Sefer. By the time, they have a big stack of Sfarim on the table, and the Rav, he looks very dejected. And Rav Chaim Ozer leans over to him, and he says to him, he says, why are you despondent? It took all of those Sfarim to get into your head. So they had a close relationship. So Rav Soloveitchik delivers the eulogy. The full Hesped is published in this volume. It's called Divrei Hagos Vaharacha. It's collected essays in Hebrew. I do not know who did the translation of this Hesped, because I'm quite certain, although I cannot say with a fact because I was not there, I'm quite certain that this Hesped was probably delivered originally in Yiddish. But the Hesped here is translated in Hebrew. The beginning of the Hesped, which is entitled Noseh HaTzitz VaHachoshen, the carrier of the Tzitz and the Choshen, which we'll explain in a minute. The beginning is just an introductory comment about how difficult it is for him to eulogize Reb Chaim Ozer Grozensky. And he uses a beautiful, magnificent metaphor. He was a master eulogist. There's an entire essay, The Rav as a Maspid. I think Rabbi Ganak wrote it, if you're interested in more of this. The Rav was just a brilliant everything. And one of the things he was brilliant at was delivering eulogies. We've quoted over the years some of the eulogies from Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim Heller, and from the Brisker Rav and others. Masterful. So he uses an image from a comment in the Talmud Yerushalmi that when they were chasing Rabbi Meir, the wind blew off his yarmulke, which was a scarf, probably a mitpachat. So he was wearing a scarf, and the wind blew the back of the mitpachat up, and they could see, as he was chasing, they could just see the edge of his neck. That's the image in the Yerushalmi. That's how he begins this eulogy. And he describes how Rav Chaim Ozer was on the run during World War I, and he was being persecuted and ran, and he says, I have to tell you that while he was running from Rav Chaim Ozer, I had a chance to glimpse, as he was running away, just as the wind blew his hood, I just saw the back of the neck of Rav Chaim Ozer. He says, "Who I can't fully appreciate Rav Chaim Ozer. He was beyond." He say, the Rav says, I saw a drop. I saw a glimpse. That's the image that he uses to open this Hesped, to say, who am I? I can tell you this. It's impossible. It's impossible to be Masped Rav Chaim Ozer. And he gives a couple of other examples of how impossible it is to be Masped Rav Chaim Ozer. There's like 3 pages of just introduction of what he's about to say. And then he gets to the main point. And the reason we're talking about it today is because it's from this coming week's parasha, Parashas Tetzaveh, from the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol, the clothing of the high priest. The pasuk says that the Kohen Gadol has to wear special garments. 2 distinct garments are the focus of this eulogy of Rav Soloveitchik: Hatzitz, the Tzitz, and the Choshen. The Tzitz, which was a gold plate, Vasisa Tzitz, Zahav, Tahar, you make a gold plate. It says on it, Kodesh Lashem, and it goes on the forehead of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol wears the tzitz, L'ratzon Lahem Lefnei Hashem, to accomplish Ritzui. The word Ritzui is very difficult to translate. Literally, in English, you would probably use the word appeasement to translate the word Ritzui, L'ratzos. I think literally in English, you would say it's to appease. but really it means to connect with, to fulfill your obligation of connection, of being wanted. So when we talk about a carbon is brought for ritzui, so to speak, that we should feel a sense of being wanted by Hashem, and that Hashem should, so to speak, want to be with us. That's the concept of the word ritzui. And that is connected to the tzitz, because the Gemara in Yuma has a special halacha that there are certain tumas that would ordinarily disqualify a carbon, but if the Kohen Gadol is wearing the tzitz, or even according to one opinion, he just has a tzitz, that still accomplishes the ritzui of the carbon. The carbon is still acceptable. It makes us feel that connection of wanting to Hashem. That's this concept of ritzui l'ratzon. That's one. Then there is the choshen. What is the choshen? The choshen is that special plate that was worn on the chest of the Kohen Gadol that had the stones of the Jewish people. And the pasuk says, it is al libo. It is resting on the heart of the Kohen Gadol, tamid. Lifnei Hashem, tamid. So the tzitz, Rav Soloveitchik points out, that was meratzeh, that accomplished this wanting between us and Hashem, if there was, God forbid, a case of tumah in this carbon. The tzitz was kodesh l'Hashem. That's what it said on it, and that's what its designation was. The tzitz was placed where? On the head. It's associated with the mind. The Meitzach. Al Meitzach Aharon is connected with the place of what the Rav Soloveitchik refers to as the Seichel and the Das. But the Choshen was placed on the Lev, the seat of the emotions, the heart, the love. The love for who? The Jewish people. All the names of the Shvatim were engraved and placed on his heart. So to speak, says Rav Soloveitchik, the mishpat, the leadership of the Jewish people, that's represented, of the Kohen Gadol's leadership, that's represented by the Choshen. The tzitz, says Rav Soloveitchik, the tzitz is the analytical mind that would, in his words, paskin shilas of iser veheter, kosher, non-kosher, tameh, tahar, pure, impure, chayav, pater. But the tzitz was not the only posek, was not the only model of leadership. It wasn't the only direction. The Choshen, he says, would paskin shilas of another nature. The Choshen would ask, we would ask the Choshen questions of national import. For example, inside the Choshen was placed the Urim v'Tumim. So if a person was a melech and they had a question about whether or not they should go to a particular military action, not self-defense, obviously that's milchemes mitzvah, but it's unsure. So you ask the Urim v'Tumim, you ask the Choshen. It's a leadership question for the people. Ele o lo ele. Should I go to battle or not go to battle? Eshtamish b'midas mishma v'duma umasa ele o ele. How should we? Should we engage in diplomacy, in a military strike? What do we do? Should we gather for some kind of public policy issue? Ekra la'asifos macha pumbis. Should we gather all the people for a rally? Or should we not? Ele o ele. Should we confront? Tzarachani limchos keneged malchusu sheyachzivas Yisrael. Should we confront, take an aggressive posture against an enemy, political or military or otherwise, or should we not? Right, these are all what we might call national security issues, public policy issues. These are things that we're hearing about in the news all the time now, which we wonder about and people have to make decisions about. Two types of questions. Questions for the tzitz, questions for the choshen. So he goes on and gives several examples. All these examples bring him to the piece that you have in front of you on page 3. Let's read it together. Rav Soloveitchik now makes his key point. Oso HaKohen, that same Kohen, says Rav Soloveitchik in 1940, Shehayah Lavush B'Tzitz HaKodesh, who was wearing the holy tzitz, Shahaya Maratza Alatuma, that was creating this sanctity, this kashrus, this wanting in a case of Tumah in the Karban. Shahaya Posek Bashir Ksamim Umikfos, who would paskin and rule on questions of Nida stains and questions of mikvahs, be'erevin and basa b'chalav, kashrus and erev, hayanishal be'urim v'tumim. He was also the same person who was asked national questions through the urim v'tumim. This special mechanism, this spiritual light, which would illuminate answers through the choshen. Oso ha'kohen, that was the same kohen. Oso ha'kohen ha'yagam posek, he would also rule the kovea masmerim and fix nails lahalacha, in halacha, b'chol habayos hachamuros, in all of the serious, grave questions, shall ele o lo ele, should we go up to war or not? Shall milchama v'shalom, war and peace, shall tikva of hope v'yiyush, and despair, shall yachasenu of our relationship l'umos ha'olam, to the leaders of the world and the world nations, v'la shalton. Oso ha'kohen, that same kohen, said Rav Soloveitchik, shemocho ha'yasafel kedushas ha'torah, that his mind was suffused with the sanctity of Torah. Shall Rabbi Akiva of Rabbi Eliezer, the great Mishnaic giants, shall Abaye v'Rava, the giants of the Gemara, shall Arambam v'Araiva, the Rishonim, Beis Yosef and Ramah, the great halachas of the 16th century, Hoya Roe Beruach HaKodesh, would see with Ruach HaKodesh, Pitaron, an answer, Kol HaShelos HoPolitios, HaOmdos Al HaPerek, to all of the political issues that were at the moment on the agenda. Bechol havayos ha'olam hazeh, all of the aspects of this world. Bechol tvios, all the questions, ha'olos ala perek tamid b'liharif, incessantly. Yeshna igeres achas, there was a letter from the people of Rhinus to someone, a question in Trefa and a question in a false Messiah. These two questions, he says, are connected to each other. Let's go to the last paragraph in this section. Hakava Ikari, the main thread, Ba'ofio Shel Reb Chaim Ozer, in the character of Reb Chaim Ozer, who Shel Locham Becheref Nefesh, is that he fought with his every fiber, with his full being, Al Chiburo, on the connection, V'ichudo, on the unity, Shel Hachushen Im Hatzitz, with the Choshen and the Tzitz. Lo histapek betafket shol mor hora be'isr v'heter bovad. He did not suffice with the role of paskening shilos, of writing tshuvas, of ruling in questions of kashrus, b'miktzoa shol hatzitz, in the area of the Tzitz. Ella shimish gam betor posik betchuma shol choshen mish, but he also ruled in areas that were of national interest. He worried and was concerned and was attuned to the false hashkafa, the false outlook on life which divides the tzitz and the choshen. Rav Soloveitchik writes, who he saw she'im manhigim chadishim, new leadership, haboatim b'torah mesorah, who speak for the Jewish people, they have national leadership roles, but they totally reject Torah and our tradition. Yachziku b'choshen ha'mishpat, if they are the ones who carry the choshen mishpat to answer national questions, az yolichu es ha'am ha'kalkalos, they'll take us totally down the wrong path. Rav Soloveitchik publicly denounces the notion of the bifurcation of the tzitz and the choshen. You cannot separate the Jewish law questions with the Jewish leadership questions. They must be together. You can't have one without the other. And Reb Chaim Ozer personified this synthesis. That was the thesis of this Hesped. Now, this is published in that article, in that in the context, in that Jewish observer, because it's in the context of an article about what's called colloquially Das Torah, which in that article is referred to the role of Torah sages and their perspective, their input on questions that are non-halachic in nature, political or otherwise. This piece in Rav Soloveitchik is an eloquent and articulate expression of the thesis, the thrust of what is being presented in that article and in the perspective of Agudas Yisrael as a movement in general and as many in the Torah community. This idea is espoused by the Chazon Ish. This is a sefer called His Orus from Rav Greinemann, quoting from the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish writes, Hashita lasas es haTorah l'chalokim shnonim. The idea that we're going to split the Torah into two different halves, Horah b'Isser v'Heter, ruling on kashrus in one side, chelak echad, v'horah b'shuk hachayim, and rulings about the marketplace of life, on the other, chelak sheni, lios nichnoim, that we should be subservient, lohoras chachmei hador, to the guidance and the rulings of the chachmei hador, bechelak harishon, in the first arena, ulahashir lechapes bechirasam bechelak hasheni, but we do not listen to the Torah sages when it comes to other issues facing Jews and Jewish community. Hishita hayeshana shel haminim, biyiridas hayados ba'ashkenaz. This is the approach of those original reformers in Germany, asher hidichu es am Yisrael, that took the Jewish people, the assimilationists, the reformers, that's their approach. Hafla, splitting, creating a distinction. Bein horas iser v'heta l'horas hagdarim v'agzeros. Hafla zos higilu yponim b'toru u'mevazat ha'mini chachamim. It is an abrogation of this tradition of Torah. It's a shame. V'nimnin bein elu she'enlem chalek olam v'haba. The strongest language of the Chazon Ish, he would say these are people who have no share in the world to come. And then this is further articulated, one more perspective. Rav Moshe Feinstein spoke at the Aguda Convention in 1977, and in the Jewish Observer, there was a summary of the different talks. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky gave a talk, and it's summarized there, and Rav Ruderman, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, also, they gave different talks, and it was summarized by people who were at the convention. So Rav Moshe writes, said the following, apparently, this is not his own writing, this is somebody summarizing it in the Jewish Observer. Following the lead of the Torah leadership in all matters, even those not directly governed by the rulings of the Shulchan Aruch, has always been a fundamental principle of Agudas Yisrael. Those who maintained, what do they, the Talmidei Chachamim, know about politics? This is a field where we are better versed. Groups that set their policies in such a manner cannot be considered as being within the Torah camp. One might well say that ignoring the advice of the Talmud Chacham is far worse than transgressing a lav, clearly expressed in the Torah. And he goes on to explain. This imperative applies to Klal Yisrael as a whole, as is recognized by Agudas Yisrael. Indeed, the administration of Agudas Yisrael consults with Gedolei Torah, it asks, it listens, and it acts in all manners in accordance with the advice that is rendered. This should be the guiding principle of every individual as Jew as well. And this is confirmed in the biography of Rav Moshe Scherer, the great Aguda communal leader, who relates to this many times about that they acted always in accordance with the direct direction of the Mwetzes Gedolei HaTorah of Agudas Yisrael. So this approach, which was articulated already by Rav Soloveitchik in 1940, sets out this approach to life. The question is, when you think about a person's worldview and a person's life, is it static? Or is it dynamic? Do people develop over time? Do they change? Do they evolve? So maybe it depends on the person. But Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik most definitely evolved. And this is a significant question for us, because as Torah Jews, we cannot exist without Masorah. We have a tradition, and that's the only reason that we still exist, that we're still here. And we seek to pass that tradition to our children and grandchildren and future generations. And that Masorah hinges on Chachmei HaMasorah, which is a time for a different talk, which we also dealt with in a different context several years ago. For many people, in many constituencies, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik, he is the pillar of Masorah. And Rav Soloveitchik's opinion, his perspective on life, is significant, maybe even paramount. So the fact that Rav Soloveitchik says that Chachmei HaMasorah, Torah sages, are the ones to guide us on questions related to Isser V'Heter, and also of national interest, is very significant. So when you're thinking about how to navigate a pandemic, or other personal questions that are beyond the scope of, you know, a specific local issue that's halakhic and narrow in nature, where do we look in terms of guidance? Now, at the global level, there are many Mar Makomos to look at, the letter from the piece from the Alter Rebbe and a piece from Rav Dessler, many, many other sources. That's not the point that I want to talk about today, but that is certainly a worthy discussion, a whole perspective, a question on how do we view what we could call the Makoros related to this question of Das Torah. But I really want to focus on just reflecting on this Hesped from Rav Soloveitchik, because for many people, Rav Soloveitchik is their lodestar. It's interesting that Rav Soloveitchik, in many aspects of his life, did develop. There's a tradition article that was published in 1996 by the late communal leader himself, Rabbi Bernard Rosenzweig, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Rabbi Rosenzweig was my professor in Jewish history. He was a rabbi in Queens for many years. He was a very active lay leader, a very active rabbinic leader in the RCA.
Michael's father.
That's right, Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig's father. So he wrote an article in Tradition in 1996. The Rav passed away in 1993, and he wrote about Rav Soloveitchik as a communal leader because they interacted as he was the head of the RCA, and Rav Soloveitchik was the head of the Vada Halacha of the RCA, so they interacted on many issues. How to relate to the conservative movement, as you're aware, there was a whole controversy about the New York Board of Rabbis and other types of questions, communal questions, Russian Jews, working with the Vatican, every possible communal question you could imagine. So take a look at source number 4. It says Rabbi Rosenzweig, the Rav himself was a card-carrying member of Agudas Yisrael. In 1935, he traveled to Israel for the first and only time in his life to try out for the position of chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. He made a brilliant impression with his shiurim and lectures, but he was not elected. Who, by the way, who did he lose to? Rav Amiel. Okay? The reason that was given was that he was, quote, too young. Think about it. Rav Soloveitchik was 32 years old at that time to be the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. The real reason, according to Rabbi Rosenzweig, was that his great uncle, Rav Meir Berlin, vetoed him because of his Agudah credentials. The Rav was the star of the Agudah convention, and people flocked to hear him. For example, when Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski died, it was the Rav who delivered a masterful eulogy over Rav Chaim Ozer at the Agudah convention. So this is what we're talking about. At that time, no one questioned the Rav's credentials, and his Berlin doctorate was not a detriment to his honored position in the Agudas Israel hierarchy. However, in the 40s, the Rav underwent a slow transformation, and by the 50s, he was a committed religious Zionist. The Rav admits that his, quote, links with Mizrahi grew gradually, that he had his, quote, doubts and reservations about the validity of the Mizrahi approach, end quote, and that his decision ran counter to his family tradition. But the Rav made his decision firmly on behalf of Mizrahi. He was impressed by its achievements. He was convinced that, quote, from the point of the view of history, religious Zionism had saved the honor of religious Jews. It had, quote, created, quote, a network of schools in which Bnei Akiva, yeshivas, and Hesder yeshivas are the crown. It has ensured the unity of the Jewish people by making matters of personal status answerable to the rabbinate and excluding civil marriage, end quote. The Rav recognized this and affirmed that without the pioneering efforts of Mizrahi, the yeshiva world, quote, could not have transplanted itself into the land of Israel in the aftermath of the Holocaust. And as you know, Rav Soloveitchik was the honorary president of the Mizrahi in the 1950s. He delivered several important talks for Mizrahi. They were published originally in Yiddish as Fear Drushes, then as in Hebrew, after they added one more, as Chamesh Drashot, and now Chamesh Drashot is available in English in a book called The Rav Speaks. That's where these quotes are coming from Chamesh Drashot. So the Rav underwent a change of perspective. This is developed more in an article published a few years ago by Rav Soloveitchik's student, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Rakefet Rothkopf. In this article, he talks about how Rav Soloveitchik was arguably the greatest exponent of religious Zionism in the latter half of the 20th century and traveled a long path to reach this position. And he comes through the exact same ideas and he develops why he thinks, or how you can see Rav Soloveitchik's points of departure with his previous hashkafic stance. If you're unsure about how the Aguda community viewed Rav Soloveitchik after this change, and how what he said at the Mizrahi conventions was received, just take a look at this piece in a Maimar from Rav Lezer Shach, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the late Panavisha Rosh Hashiva. You know, the Rav Soloveitchik delivered these drushos, these talks, at the Mizrahi conventions, and I heard from the late Rav Schwartz Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who told me that he remembered sitting in the audience listening to these conventions in New York at the hotel. He said he heard them firsthand. And at these talks, Rav Soloveitchik extolled the Mizrahi and talked about how, in the first one, how the Mizrahi represented Yosef. And that even though Yosef was only one of the brothers and the other 10 brothers disagreed with him, in Rav Soloveitchik's opinion, it was Yosef who saved the future of the family of Yaakov. And it was the Mizrahi who was saving Jews. And imagine had the Mizrahi been more influential before the war, and what has it meant for the involvement of the religious people in the founding of the state? V'chule, v'chule. So he writes a lot of interesting things about Mizrahi and this movement and this identity. So Rav Lezer Shach writes in this letter, Karasi gam karasi she'laschem b'mashin izdamin liyedchem sefer chamesh drashos. I read that you wrote to me about this thing called chamesh drashos, the sefer. Shall Harav Yosef Dov Halevi, Harav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik Sheyich Yemi Boston. Vegam Ubo Karatem, and you read there, Hashkafa Acheres Legamri, a completely different Hashkafa, Mikol Masha Shamatim by Yeshiva. A totally different Hashkafa than you heard in Panovich. Hashkafa Bedas Torah Bechol Masha Torah Mekifa, how to think about Das Torah, about the role of Torah in life. Am Yisrael b'chlal b'anagas Hashem Yisbarach. So Rav Shach says, the truth is, second paragraph, Ha'emes sha'af pam lo ra'isi sefer z'atzman achrum. I never saw this sefer Chamesh Drashos, says Rav Shach in Bnei Brak. Never saw it. I guess it wasn't a popular item in the Svarim shops in Bnei Brak. U'bidyuk kishikibalti mechtavchem. When I got your letter, I found it. I got it. Hisanyanti l'rosa sefer. And not only that, I also got a sefer, which I have at home, not just the Chamesh Drashos, but I also have this sefer called Kavod HaRav, which is a festschrift, a compilation of essays written by great Talmid Chachamim in honor of Rav Soloveitchik. So Rav Shach says, I got the Chamesh Drashos, I got the sefer Kavod HaRav, where great Rabbanim in America are writing honorary tributes to Rav Soloveitchik and Chidushei Torah. V'tameani! How could they write a sefer Kavod HaRav honoring Rav Soloveitchik and no one criticizes Chamesh Drashos? No one criticizes Hashkafa? He says, it sounds like from the fact that they didn't protest what the Rav says in Chamesh Drashos, sounds like they even agree with him. How outrageous is that, says Rav Shach. I'm sending you a letter, third to last line. I'm protesting what the Rav said. I should really speak a lot longer at this. Rav Shach says, I absolutely protest this, completely and wholeheartedly. Absolutely. To say these things and to introduce them into the Jewish people, into Jewish thought, impossible. Outrageous. And yet, Rav Soloveitchik did make this shift. And one of the things that Rav Shach is alluding to, and this Rav Soloveitchik doesn't address directly in the Chumash Drashos, is this original position. He made many changes when he shifted from his Aguda affiliation to his Mizrahi affiliation. The question is, and it's not so clear, and Rav Soloveitchik is not here to ask him, what would he say about his drasha, his eulogy, for Rav Chaim Moshe Grozensky? Is it true that the only perspective on matters of national interest come from people who are only the Nosei Hatzitz? It's interesting that Rav Shechter, Mori V'Rabbi, Rav Herschel Shechter Shalita, in his book in Drashas HaRav, so he tells in his he has like these small volumes, Nefesh HaRav, Mipnini HaRav, Drashas HaRav, things that he learned from Rav Soloveitchik. He was a student from Rav Soloveitchik for many decades. And he puts down Hanhagos, practices of the Rav, and stories, and lots of different things. So he tells you on this page, he says, when it came to halachic matters, Rav Soloveitchik was very insistent on saying, you don't have to accept my opinion. If you ask my opinion, I'll tell you my opinion, but you don't have to accept it. And I've heard this from Rav Shechter in the name of the Rav many times. And he says this is true also, Gam v'shchein shamanu b'inyanim politium gam kein. When it came to political issues, he says that bottom right-hand column, many times Rav Chaim Soloveitchik insisted on a political position, but his grandson, Rav Soloveitchik, was not like that. Rabbeinu Aragel, top and left column, harbei pami, many times, she'inenu omer kablu daiti, he didn't say, you have to accept what I say. V'chein ha'yaragel omer gam binyani p'sak halacha v'gam binyani politika. Shamanu mir Rav Nachum Lam sheyichya. We heard from Dr. Lam, Rav Shechter says, I heard from Dr. Lam, that Dr. Lam came to the Rav with a political question. Shepam nishal Rabbeinu al eze inyan political. A political question came to the Rav. Veishel Rav Ashol is daito benidon, and he answered. Achakachazar Ashol v'omar azay hadas Torah shel Rabbeinu ikach v'kach. So the person said to the Rav, so Rebbe, your das Torah is this and such? And the Rav said to him, v'tekef hiki Rabbeinu v'omar bekpeda lo amarti das Torah. I didn't say das Torah. Rak amarti shekein daiti nota, that's what I think. And you should decide. Shechter elsewhere quotes, he put in the bracket here, he quotes from Rabbi Ganak that the Rav once commented that he never heard the phrase Das Torah in Europe. People didn't use that phrase. And then the next page, he tells in the footnote, earlier in the Sefer, he tells in the footnote, here it's talking about the essays about the development of Israel. This was delivered in 1943, so it's after the Tzitzin Choshen, but it's also after people in America become more and more aware of what was going on in Europe, which according to Rabbi Rakefet is part of what created a change in Rav Soloveitchik's outlook on the world. Because when he writes the Hesped for Rav Chaim Moser in the introduction, he's talking about that there's a churban going on in Europe. But that churban going on in Europe in November of 1940 was nothing compared to what he was going to find out in the coming years, 1942, 1943, 1943, 1945. And this awareness of the destruction of his entire world from the world of Europe looms large in his perspective on religious Zionism, which is for a whole nother day. But that probably contributed to his shift in affiliation and orientation. So he says, Uma'anyein, that the Rav once mentioned that when he was in Berlin, he went to Vilna to visit Rav Chaim Moshe Grozensky, to talk in learning, and one time it somehow came up the question of maybe there would once be a Jewish state in the land of Israel. Reb Chaim Moser said to Rav Soloveitchik, there will be a Jewish state in Palestine when hair grows on the palm of my hand. He said it was so rachak mimetzius. Rav Shechter notes that Reb Chaim Moser was a great political thinker, and yet He didn't conceive in any way that there was going to be a state of Israel which would be formed in 1948. So I can't tell you, because I'm not very knowledgeable about anything in the world, and certainly not in the law and the logic and the thought of Rav Soloveitchik, what he really thought at the end of his life about this question of how we as individuals and a community look to Gedolei Torah for input. But I can share with you the perspective of his very close, one of his maybe arguably greatest and closest disciples, the late Gaon Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was Mishamish the Rav in so many aspects of life. The fact that he was his son-in-law probably gave him a little in. And he raises this whole issue about the relationship between Torah greatness and insight into non-Torah matters in a sophisticated and complex essay, which is published in this volume. This is the Divrei HaRav. This is the third volume of Rav Schechter's Sfarim, which we were just quoting from. This is Leaves of Faith. This is from the 14th chapter in the second volume, Leaves of Faith. Some of the words in this essay, you need a thesaurus or a dictionary, but that's okay. You can still get through it. It might take you a couple weeks, but so we're going to parse out just two little lines where he's talking about the opinion of Rav Shach and this same question about the original position of the Tzitz and the Choshen that Rav Soloveitchik pointed out versus the question of a different perspective. Look at the left-hand column. Nevertheless, I find the alternative view, third paragraph, that Gedolei Torah are professional experts whose authority and wisdom can ordinarily be regarded as confined to the area of their technical proficiency, simply inconceivable. So what are people going to say? The simplistic narrative is, you know, the Rav said that Tzitz and the Choshen speech when he was an Agudist, then he became Mizrahi, and he threw it all away. So now, we should make decisions in life, and who needs the rabbis? Who needs Gedolei Torah? Why ask them? Rav Aaron says, that's simply inconceivable. Our abiding historical faith in the efficacy of Torah as a pervasive, ennobling, informing, and enriching force dictates adoption of the concept of Das Torah in some form or measure. And then he goes on to give various perspectives, as he often would, on one hand, on a second hand, on a third hand. Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, it was like an octopus. You know, he had so many hands. There were many, many hands. You could read more on your own. Take a look on the right side, and there's more to say about this too. And yet, at the bottom, I believe that it still exists for both intrinsic and ancillary reasons. Rav Lichtenstein says that in our community, where we are dafka engaged in modernity, connecting with the outside world, navigating a complex reality, it's crucial that we have Torah personalities who guide us in all areas of life. For one thing, some of the most controversial issues, Torah Umada is a prime example, have clear halachic import. So first of all, to think that this question is somehow divorced from a halachic question is sometimes very short-sighted. Very often there are halachic issues that are interwoven into any example. And so as you're thinking about the theory of this discussion and the theory of the Tzitz and the Choshen, you can also now layer on, and maybe we were never sensitive to this as much as we are now on a communal level, just layer on COVID. What does a community do? How does a community respond to an unprecedented? You know, like, what do you do? How do you look at that? So the answer is, you ask the Chachmei HaMasorah. Because the question of closing shuls and not closing shuls, is that not a halachic question? Right? Whether to wear a mask or not might not be a halachic question, but it certainly has intersection with halachic questions. And whether or not you should shorten the davening on Rosh Hashanah or not, these are halachic questions. So the question of how do you relate to a pandemic, begadol, relates to a lot of specific halachic queries, bekatan. But more than that, second, significant philosophic cruxes are matters of perennial debate, only partially bound to a reading of the modern map. Attitudes to yeshuvah shel olam, meaning how we go to work, how we interact with society, or the nature and the scope of the Yisachar Zvulun relationship, awaited formulation in the times that we've shown him, no less in our own. These considerations aside, and it's just so beautiful and it's so important, and for many of us who had Rabbeim when we grew up, and whether we were in yeshiva or in other places, it reinforces our need to connect to them. And for those of us who did not, we should seek them out. Maybe even people, let's start with people who are not living, whose lessons we can learn through writing. People who are alive, whose shiurim we can listen to, who we can speak to, who when they come to Chicago we can listen to. These considerations aside, however, even if it were wholly licit to sever all links with contemporary Gedolim, so as to rely instead upon selective, even avowedly submissive recourse to earlier authorities. So you're saying, I'm not going to ask what the Gedolim today say. I'll look at some obscure Rishon or some Shita opinion from 1,000 years ago, and that will justify what I do today, how I act, my behavior. So beautiful, he says. It would be grossly mistaken, and for both a personal and a communal standpoint. The statement attributed to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that both Misnagdim and Chassidim are in error. This is funny. He says, I never knew this until I read this. That the former in thinking they could do without a Rebbe and the latter in imagining that they have found one is apt in this conviction, at least respect to the former. A person, and not only the ordinary person, needs a Gavra Rabba. Gavra Rabba is literally translated as a great man, a great person, a guide, to serve in part as a role model if possible, and in part as a realization of what Whitehead called, quote, the vision of greatness. To lift one's sights and aspirations, extending the bounds of what he strives to achieve. We all need that. And suffusing him with appreciation and admiration for what he senses he cannot achieve. To guide on the one hand and inhibit on the other. This is not a matter of popular hagiolatry, which I do not know what that word means, or Carlean hero worship. That I think I know what it means. It is a spiritual necessity, all the more so within, next page, our tradition, for which an Adam Gadol is the embodiment of the Mesorah and of Torah Shebaal Peh. Rava's statement, Kama tipshoi shar inshi, de kame mikame sefer Torah v'lo kame mikame rabba. How foolish are ordinary people who rise in honor of a sefer Torah but do not rise in honor of a great person, makes the point succinctly. When the sefer Torah goes, here, just parenthetically, what he's saying, when the sefer Torah goes from the bima to the aron, we all stand. Because we all understand, we appreciate, we recognize that this is the embodiment of Kedusha. This is the most meaningful center point of the Shekhinah as it's manifest in the world. It's as Kedusha Saskaro, so we stand. But when there is a great Talmud Chacham, who is a living and walking Sefer Torah, Rava says, people don't get up. They don't realize that the personality has the same, if not greater, import. Of course, we are all awed and inspired by past masters too. But the element of contemporaneity, of that of Vahayu Einecha Ro'os Es Morecha, but thine eyes should see thy teachers, adds a dimension no one should readily abandon. This is not easy. It's tricky. Because we do not believe in hero worship. And there are times when there are people who we think we should look up to who turn out to be charlatans. Who they betray us. And people are people. Nobody is perfect. No one's malachim, anshe kodesh tiyunli. But that doesn't mean that we abandon the notion of looking to people in every generation. Yiftach bedor, kishmul bedor, every generation has those people. Rav Lichtenstein himself, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he looked up to great people. He has, in the first volume, and we don't have time for it today, a beautiful, majestic, brief, very brief portrait that was published in the Jewish Action, a portrait of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal. Because in this article, in the volume 2, he's talking about, and this is beyond the scope of today, which we could talk about a different time, what makes somebody an Adam Gadol? What makes someone a No Tzitzitz V'choshen? So he gives an example of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And in a different essay on this topic of Das Torah, which was not, he didn't write it, but it was written up, he says, not every Talmud Chacham is Rav Shlomo Zalman. But we need to look out for those people, to try to find them, and then to appreciate them, to look up to them, to listen to them. He gives such, it's mamish, a magnificent portrait talking about the qualities, the uniqueness of Rav Shlomo Zalman. This is coming from one of the Gedolei Olam, but Rav Lichtenstein needed someone. I guess also he needed, because when his daughter asked him about getting her ears pierced, he was not in favor from halachic perspective. So she said, well, then we have to go ask a shaila. We should go to Rav Shlomo Zalman. And they did. And Rav Shlomo Zalman told Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, that it's permitted. So she did get her ears pierced. Because everyone needs a Rebbe. We all need a Rebbe. We can't think that we are going to individually answer life's questions of the Choshen without the input of a Nosei Hatzitz. To what extent the Rav at the end of his life thought that the exact relationship and the formulation of the Tzitz and the Choshen should be, I don't know. Rav Soloveitchik's not here, we can't ask him. But the question of to what extent is the Tzitz and the Choshen, is that in conversation with each other in our own personal lives? That question we can ask ourselves. We're dealing with Choshen questions all the time. And we deal with Tzitz questions all the time. Do we have people to whom we can turn? We need to make sure we're asking shilas that are nogea to the Tzitz, and also shilas that are nogea to the Choshen. On the one hand, we look to defer. On the other hand, we have personal autonomy. We have personal responsibility. We have to make our own choices. So this is a complex issue. It's not simple or simplistic. But raising this question, keeping in mind these two models of the Tzitz and the Choshen, and the indispensable nature, the quality of Masora, of having a Rebbe, of appreciating the Adam Gadol in our contemporary generation, as Rav Lichtenstein points out, is something that is pertinent to our lives here and now.